I've wanted to quit to all the families that you talk to and that hear this. I've wanted to quit so many times. I can't. I want to quit. Every day I want to quit. But I can't. I created Jennifer. I love her. I raised her. She's my flesh and blood. I can't give it up. Sorry. And I don't take that away from anyone else who can't do it. I don't. Because it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Period. But I want to give up. And I can't. And I won't.
Welcome back to Unconcluded. I'm Sean Gerd. Over the past few months, we've been looking into the May 2009 disappearance of Tracy Ocasio. But in this episode, we're going to take the opportunity to catch up on some of the various aspects of not only Tracy Ocasio's disappearance, but also that of Jennifer Kesey, which, as you probably know, we've been working on for quite some time. Months, which have turned into years. Specific to Jennifer Kesey, just this week, I had a chance to catch up with Drew Kesey, Jen's dad, and talk about what's been going on with the search for Jennifer since the family's agreement with the Orlando police regarding her files. The last time we had spoken was prior to the results of the lawsuit, and I wanted to see what had changed because of it. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. First, I want to go over some of the things that we've gotten from all of you out there listening in regards to Tracy Ocasio and Jennifer Kesey. It's been a while since we had a chance to respond to your messages and calls, and we wanted to wrap it into this episode as well. Not exactly a sidebar episode, but certainly elements from what you may remember when we used to do those. Since we're no longer doing specific sidebar episodes, this is our way of making sure that we get to those things. Also, we thought it might be a good time to talk about our current thoughts regarding both cases. So Scott and I are going to get together and just chat about our opinions on where things are, and if those have changed over the last several months. So with all of that, Scott and I caught up earlier this week. Hey, so I was thinking this week that maybe we could get into both the Tracy Ocasio and Jennifer Kesey cases, meaning just, I guess, looking at kind of the loose ends, or maybe loose ends isn't the right word, just kind of circling back to both of them. And so I think to get started, maybe we can bring in some of our listeners as far as the calls and emails and social media and all of that stuff that we haven't really been able to get to recently. And I mentioned it to you earlier about getting that together. Did you have a chance to kind of look at that stuff and pull it out?
Yeah, we had quite a bit of stuff, actually. There was some, or along the same line of thinking. So I've sort of narrowed some of those down and picked one that were essentially of the same topic. But yeah, we've got quite a few here, so I can we can get to those. And I think some of these questions are really, really good.
All right, well, let's start with that then. So just go ahead and I know you have them. So if you want to just kind of read them out and then we can kind of discuss them and then we'll go from there.
All right, so we got one here. It says, "Hey guys, so I've been listening since shortly after your first episode came out. I really enjoy the format that you use. Just finished the second episode on Tracy and listened to you speculate on reasons why the seats might be pushed forward. I've included these details and I might be wrong, but I was driving during part of that episode and it made me start thinking. What I'm picturing in my head is that the car was parked on the street similar to any two-way, two-lane residential road you would find in any suburban or urban area with a large shoulder for street parking. If I wanted to move an object from the car parked on the street, the conventional thing to do would be to park the new vehicle directly behind the old one and make the transfer on the sidewalk side of the cars. But if it's in the wee hours of the morning and I want to do this as fast as possible to avoid anybody noticing me, maybe I realized right before starting that the safer bet would be to just park the new vehicle directly beside the old vehicle blocking traffic, rather than traveling 10 feet with the object and it only has to be moved 2 feet. If a car was in the parking lot, this makes sense because they would have a reason to choose one side over the other. Thanks for putting quality time into research and not letting these people be forgotten. I live in a completely different part of the country, so it's not surprising that I've never heard of these cases, but it's nice that someone is taking these tragedies and giving them a much broader audience." And that one was from Bryce.
Yeah, so I guess this kind of goes back to, you know, what we talked about in our last episode, Scott, with the car, and we were talking a lot about why that car would have been where it was. And to kind of address what Bryce said first, yeah, it is kind of your typical one lane in either direction road, but there's no shoulder or anything. It's kind of almost, I know it's in a city, but it's almost like a rural road. It's just kind of grass right on the side of the road there. There's not even a curb or anything. And the area that her car was kind of like this dirt driveway almost, or like a dirt area that had been compacted from cars driving or parking on it. So it wasn't necessarily in the grass as much as it was just kind of in like a dusty parking area. And yeah, I think what he says is similar to what we were thinking. And it all goes back to what we talked about last time. Like, is the car the starting point or the ending point? Was Tracy in the back seat and she was moved to another vehicle? Or was the vehicle used to move Tracy somewhere and then brought back to that point? And then the seats being pushed forward, Scott, I don't know, we have talked about this so many times now, but the seats being pushed forward at that point makes you think that maybe it was a starting point to another means of transportation, because, you know, if he, you know, as the suspect, obviously, if he had taken Tracy out of the car somewhere else, then he would have had to push the seat back to drive back to that spot. So I don't know. I mean, does it really change anything from what we talked about last time? I think the car is important to knowing a starting or ending point, but at the same time, I'm not sure it really gets us closer to figuring out where she might be.
Yeah, that's the problem. The car in and of itself doesn't really tell us anything in terms of where, what happened either before or after the car, even with the seats pushed up and the location. Obviously, the location by itself tells us a lot, just where the car was at. But other than that, you know, it's tough to make assumptions based upon that. And I know we've gone back and forth on that, and we've made quite a few assumptions just based upon what little evidence there is and the seats being moved forward and stuff. But yeah, I agree. I don't, you know, I think Bryce brings up some good points, and I think it's something worth thinking about. But I don't know if it really changes anything in terms of what we've been thinking. Okay, next one up says, hello, I heard your last podcast about the case of Tracy Ocasio and just want to comment on the uncooperative people that you've been encountering during the investigation. I think the majority of the people you tried to interview have criminal pasts themselves. These people probably were not involved directly with Ocasio's disappearance, but maybe have past crimes they don't want any attention called to themselves, hence the hostile reactions when you contact them. I am sure some of them have been in prison and just want to lay low. I bet the police have had the same results with these people. Please continue with the investigation of Tracy's disappearance. I'm sure someone out there has information that can lead you to her. And that's from Dan from California. We also had another one from Dan. He says, hello. After my last message to you regarding the disappearance of Tracy, I decided to do a web search on her and found several links. One link was to the WESH-TV website, where there was a report of a dead woman found at the same address where Tracy's car was found abandoned. The death occurred in 2016 and was ruled a homicide later on. The police called it a coincidence and nothing more. The fact that Tracy's car was found in front of this house should make everything known about this case very fluid. The house, because of past suspect activity, is a magnet for all kinds of unsavory characters. I wonder if this woman witnessed or knew something about Tracy's disappearance. She's dead now, so we'll never know if she had any information. You guys are doing a great job based on how you handled the Kesey case, and I hope you will handle the Ocasio case the same way. Thank you again. And those were from Dan from California.
Yeah, let me address the second part, or I guess the second email there, as far as the woman who had died at the, and that was in the house that was kind of where her car was found. And we had talked about that in the last episode, actually. We brought up the fact that there were some things going on in that house that just, you know, maybe needed looking into as far as the kind of area that it was. So I think we can go back to that episode and touch on kind of what our thoughts were with that. But to his first part about the people that we've been trying to contact, and we've been having kind of a wall put up a little bit, so to speak, I would agree. I think that the reason that we're having trouble is that these individuals, or some of them anyways, do have probably some animosity towards, you know, law enforcement, media. And then along those lines, us as people who are coming along asking questions. So I sort of understand why that we may be getting some of the reaction in some cases, not all of them. Some of them are people that don't have, or at least haven't been through the legal system, you know, like he had mentioned. So, yeah, I think that that's it's a good point. But unfortunately, it doesn't really change where it stands as far as the trouble that we've had getting information from these people.
Yeah, I think going in, some of them, we even talked before we tried to contact them of, you know, this is probably a very low percentage chance this person A is going to pick up or B is going to talk to us. In some cases, we got something back from them. And, you know, we've discussed that in the last episode. It wasn't very nice or any sort of benefit to us. In other cases, I think we thought that we would be able to reach these people or that they would be willing to talk to us. And I think maybe a lot of that confidence, for lack of a better word, came from with the Jennifer Kessie case. And, I've been trying to think about why, and I think maybe because this one, there is a suspect that everyone's pretty sure had something to do with it. And because of that, maybe these people just, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want their name associated with this individual. And I know he's in prison, but you know, they may just not want to have anything to do with it at this point. They may say, listen, it is what it is at this point. We're not talking. Again, we were surprised by that a little bit, coming from a case where we had people calling us, reaching out to us, wanting to talk. And in this case, it has been the complete polar opposite of that. So, and I know every case is completely different, and there has been no better example of that than these two cases, just in terms of everything. And that includes witnesses or, you know, people connected to either one of the individuals. And so it has made it difficult. It's been surprising, again, on both sides of it. So I think he's right about the criminal behavior of some of them, no question about it. In fact, we know that for a fact in some instances. But like you said, on the other ones, it's been disheartening a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you summed it up well. All right, let's take a little quick break here to hear from our sponsor. Do you get a lot of UTIs? Turns out, you're not alone. UTIs are the second most common infection in the U.S. Half of all women get UTIs, and about 1 in 5 women struggle with recurring UTIs. If you get UTIs, you know that cranberry juice is useless, and taking too many antibiotics can be problematic. So what should you do? Try Eucora, the natural, effective way to prevent UTIs. Eucora was developed with the best research available in a collaboration with a team of physicians. Eucora's unique formula targets bacteria and enables you to safely flush bacteria out of your urinary tract, stopping UTIs before they can start. Try Eucora to break free from the endless cycle of UTIs. Eucora's founder used to struggle with UTIs herself, so she knows what it's like to be stuck in the cycle. That's why Eucora has a money-back guarantee. They really want to help. And if you aren't happy with Eucora, they don't want you to be stuck with something you don't want. Try Eucora, and if you aren't happy within 30 days, they'll give you your money back. Try Eucora risk-free for 30 days and say goodbye to UTIs. And right now, Eucora is offering 30% off when you text UTI to 484848. But hurry, this is a limited time offer. Text UTI to 484848 to get 30% off your order of Eucora. It's UTI to 484848. Thanks to Eucora for supporting our show.
And this one is going to be about Jennifer Kessie, so we'll switch gears here a little bit. Can you guys give any updates on the Jennifer Kessie case? We haven't had an update in a while, and I'm wondering if anything has changed. Have you guys' opinions changed at all since your last episode on Jennifer? Also, when will you do more episodes after Tracy Ocasio? And that one was from Megan H. Thank you, Megan.
Yeah, Scott, I meant to tell you that I wanted to refer to this one last, but no big deal. You already mentioned it. As far as the second question, how will you do more, or will we do more episodes after Tracy? Yeah, of course. I think our plan is to continue with Jennifer Kessie all along, and then fill in with some mini series type episodes. And the first of which was Tracy Ocasio. And certainly we may revisit her case as well, but moving on to some other mini series to fill in some of the time as the Jennifer Kessie case has slowed down. As far as updates on Jennifer Kessie or things that we have with our opinions have changed and stuff. Yes, we're going to address that in a few minutes at the end of Scott and I's conversation. And so, Scott, we'll just table that question for a second until we get past a couple others that we have.
Okay, sounds good. Moving on, it's discussing some Facebook stuff here. Obviously, we have a very large audience on Facebook that discusses the case, and we appreciate everyone that does that. Several people on Facebook have been asking about the nighttime versus morning abduction for Jennifer Kesey. Some of them pointed out that you'd mentioned you thought it could be a nighttime abduction in the AMA from Facebook group a few months back and how that relates to the water in the shower. Can you please elaborate on that, Sean?
Yeah, and I saw these messages and I was going to just reply to them on the page, but I figured I'd hold it for here. Listen, it's one of those things where it's important, but we're also talking about the difference of a few hours, because where does nighttime end and morning start? And that's kind of where I always go back to. You know, is 3 a.m., is that nighttime or is that morning? To me, I would consider that, you know, obviously technically it's morning, but I would consider that nighttime. Where, what about 6 a.m.? Well, 6 a.m., I would probably say, okay, that's morning. But we're talking about 3 hours difference. And so it's hard to, I think, narrow it down any more than a window of that kind of magnitude between, you know, 3 or 4 hours. And so I think we start getting into semantics if we're talking morning or nighttime as far as her abduction. I think the better way to talk about it is, was she getting ready for work in the morning or was she not? And a lot of me wants to say that it was in the morning and she was getting ready for work, but I just don't think that's the case. To me, all the things that we've talked about, the different tidbits of information here and there, some of the evidence, the, you know, information about the pings and the cell phones and all of that, it just, my gut says it was a nighttime abduction. And by nighttime, that could be 3 o'clock in the morning, or that could be midnight, or that could be 11 p.m. You know, all of that to me is considered a nighttime abduction. And if I was put on the spot, that's what I would say. And that's why I said that in the AMA is, you know, somebody just asked my opinion and that's what I'd say. As far as how that relates to, you know, somebody I saw mentioned about the shower and the water in the shower and all that kind of stuff, I think that that's just so tricky to pin down. I think it's very possible that the water in the shower could have been from the previous night. I know that that is not typical for Jennifer to shower in the evening, that was something that she did in the morning. But, you know, things happen and people go outside of their normal routines. I think especially she's coming back from a trip. This is the first time back to her house since she had been in South Florida. I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibility that she was in the shower or using the shower the night before or late that night. So to me, the water in the tub isn't kind of a smoking gun for it being the morning, but certainly it makes you think that it could be. And so we come back to the matter of hours. But, you know, like I said, if you had to pin me down, I would probably say I lean towards a nighttime abduction. What about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know with the water. And again, coming outside of her norm, I think, especially when you come back from a trip. I know when I come back from a trip, especially if I've been flying or I've been sitting in the car for an extended period of time, I'm going to take a shower before I go to bed. Even if my routine, as it typically is to take a shower in the morning before work. I don't put a lot of weight on that. I think it has to matter because it is there. So it's not something that can be completely ignored and say, no, it's definitely at night and forget about the water in the shower. You know, she could have showered at midnight. She could have showered at 12:30. She could have been unpacking, getting stuff set, and then took a shower at midnight right before she went to bed, and the water could have still been there. It is Florida. It's humid, depending on the condition of the apartment. I think there's so many factors that go into it that I think to try to read into it too much could steer us down a little bit of a rabbit hole. And I think we went through that obviously on the show, and we spent a good part of an episode discussing that. And I'm with you. I believe that it was probably something that happened at night.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny is you're sitting there, I'm listening to you talk about that. And then, you know, stuff's just running through my mind. And I'm like, you know what though? It very well could be a morning. And we go back to workers in the complex and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So it's, what is this, a matter of 3 minutes? And I'm already questioning what I said 2 seconds ago. So I think that's the problem, is there's so many possibilities with just that one particular aspect. It's so hard to just narrow it down.
Yeah, it becomes almost to where, and I mean, we've had conversations and we've had hundreds of conversations that we haven't recorded, where we're frustrated and we're trying to think this thing out. And it can become extremely frustrating to think about it. And when you start thinking about all the little things, because there's all these little details, and beyond the video of the guy and when that happened at Huntington on the Greens, everything else is sort of circumstantial. And so to try to put a timeline on all of these little circumstantial things that you really can't, really is frustrating. And that's what causes us to change our minds so frequently. And that's why we're, you know, people probably think we're crazy sometimes with being all over the map and changing directions and everything like that. But there isn't a clear path, and the road forks quite a bit in this case. And again, beyond those little bits of hard evidence, it's very challenging. And I think the shower has to matter, to sum it up. I think that it has to matter. I think the water has to matter in some respect, but I don't think it can carry so much weight that we say, yes, for sure it was in the morning. I don't think that, but I do think that it has to factor in for sure. Okay, moving on, we got something else from Facebook here. It's Amber from our Facebook group asks if we know anything additional from the Jennifer Kessie case that the listeners may not know, and if it will be covered in a future episode.
Well, I mean, this is kind of a loaded question, but I mean, do we know anything that listeners may not know? I suppose, but that's probably doesn't sound, it probably sounds more intriguing than it really is. I think, you know, we're talking about maybe names and identities and that kind of stuff that we haven't really shared with the audience. And there, you know, I will say that there are several people that we haven't mentioned at all on the podcast, and that's with intention. I think that there has to be a little bit more behind it before it can be something that we're just spouting over the airwaves. And also, I think that's also in respect to the ongoing investigation that's going on with people who are actually investigators too. And it's not really our place necessarily to, you know, air that laundry or whatever the term might be for that. So is there some stuff? Yeah, probably. But it, again, if I'm thinking about it right now, I don't think it's stuff that would be necessarily earth shattering or anything along those lines. Just bits and pieces of stuff that, you know, we've either agreed not to share or we felt like in our best interest or the case's best interest to not share. That said, again, none of that stuff is, you know, something that's going to lead to finding Jennifer tomorrow or something like that. That certainly would be a different case. I think these are small things that, for whatever reason, aren't out there. But, you know, back to what you were saying as far as future episode, yeah, for sure. And I think all of that stuff is stuff that we would hope to talk about in a future episode, especially because that would mean there's some progress going on there. Certainly, if those things start to matter, then that means that there's a path going on there that needs to be talked about. So, yeah, I don't know how else to answer that question. I think that I could spend an hour talking about that stuff. But yes, it's certainly on the table for a future episode. Yeah, there's certainly some things that we haven't put on the podcast, but I wouldn't take that as anything more than just what it is. That's not some giant, you know, thing being hidden or anything like that.
Yeah, I think when we got into this, you know, we sort of made the decision when we first started talking about doing the podcast that we weren't going to intentionally drag anybody through the mud. We weren't going to mention names if it wasn't completely necessary, just because we didn't want to do that. It's not fair to people. There's other podcasts that, you know, maybe take a little bit more liberty with that. We just didn't want to do that. And also, yeah, there has been very little information that we haven't shared. Obviously, there is some stuff. And if we are told by people close to the case, such as her parents or anybody else, that, hey, listen, that can't go out on the podcast, we've respected that every single time. So to answer the question, maybe there's some information, but like you said, it's nothing that we're holding back. Yeah, I don't, there's nothing that's being held back in terms of the case. Okay, we have one more from Facebook. Cynthia on the Facebook group asks, about tracing the steps of Jennifer and Tracy in the 3 weeks before each disappeared for to try to find clues.
Yeah, and I think I saw this one, and it was talking kind of about making the connections between Tracy and Jennifer. And way back when we did the Hathaway episode for Jennifer, we touched on a lot of these things, and initially how there was a lot of concern that there might be some overlap or there might be some connections, but ultimately there aren't. And I don't think anything's changed there. I don't think there is really a connection between the two cases other than they both took place in the Orlando area. Now, as far as tracing the steps of both of them, you know, in the weeks leading up to their disappearances, I mean, I think that that's crazy important. And I think that's something that we've tried to do. It's just when we're talking about, you know, so long after, in Jennifer's case, 13 years later, that just, it's almost an impossible task, because even if someone had that information, sharing that information and being accurate with it 13 years, I mean, no, it's very hard for someone to be able to talk about something that happened so long ago, even if they do remember it. And we would be relying on other people's statements as far as that goes. And certainly there's probably some stuff in the police files, or at least I would hope so, about that. And, you know, we do know some of the things as far as leading up to their disappearances. I know with Jennifer, we had talked in previous episodes about her night out with her friends and some different stuff like that. Obviously, she was on the trip with her boyfriend and that kind of stuff. So, you know, a lot of that is out there, but trying to find more of that or get really specific with it, I mean, that just seems almost an impossible task. But, you know, one that we're certainly up to trying to do, you know, the impossible task is the task that needs to be completed. And I think that that's something that we look at all along, is what we're these individuals doing. And that's important. Back to, I forget who you said sent this in, Scott, but you know, whoever posted this, I think we are trying to do that. But at the same time, I wouldn't be holding, you know, your breath for us to get too far with it just because of the time that's passed.
Yeah, I think it's the time. And I also think that, you know, it has to do with the timeline in and of itself. You know, there's a distinctive last time that we know something about what happened to them in terms of Jennifer coming home from a trip, and that sort of sets a timeline in motion for what happened. Same thing with Tracy being out at the bar and then leaving the bar and then something happens. So it would be fantastic if we could go back and trace all the way back 3 weeks. That would be wonderful. And I think, again, like you said, we have tried to do that. That's been something that has been a goal, because if you can put those pieces together, it's definitely going to lead to more answers. There's absolutely no question about that. But it's difficult enough to try to piece together what happened after the last place we know they were. So going back 3 weeks is an even more insurmountable task than what is already kind of known. So getting that stuff first, I think, is what's probably the most important and what we've been trying to do. And then the 3 weeks, that again, that would be great. I just don't know if it's something that's going to be possible. Okay, and that's all that we had for the emails and Facebook. And thank you to everybody who sent stuff in. I know we didn't get to everything, but again, keep it coming. We really do appreciate it. I know the families appreciate it as well. Any thought, any question that you guys have, please hit us on email or Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. And we really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, and I also do want to apologize to anyone who left a voicemail. I know we did have a handful of those. The voicemail system basically just went berserk, and I mean, I lost them. So apologies if you left a voicemail. Please call back and leave another one. It is fixed now. But I, you know, unfortunately did lose a couple of those. So just apologies if that was you. But Scott, I wanted to, before we kind of end our conversation here, I wanted to just kind of circle back to both cases that we've been talking about, Tracy Ocasio and Jennifer Kessy, and just kind of talk through our current opinions or state of, you know, our thinking, I guess it is. And I've had a lot of questions about this. You know, what do you think now? And so I figured maybe we could go through the exercise of just really quickly, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but what is our current state of thinking as far as Tracy Ocasio and Jennifer Kessy? So I'll go first, and then you can kind of follow with your thinking, and we'll go from there. Sound good?
Sounds good to me.
All right, so let's start with Tracy. I think this one is probably, I don't know. I want to say that what I was expecting coming into this and where I am right now are completely different places, but at the same time, it's kind of what I expected. And I know that doesn't really make sense, but what I mean is I felt like a lot of the things that we looked at as we were getting into the Tracy Ocasio thing were what I wasn't expecting as far as, you know, where the location of her car was, all of the possible locations, the fact that the boot was likely hers, and the location of that boot in relationship to Hathaway and the places that he was known to be. I think all of that was kind of, I don't know, it all came back pointing in the same direction, but I think I've been going back and forth on whether it was Hathaway alone or Hathaway with help. And I think that's really kind of where I've gone back and forth. I initially came into this thinking, based on the initial research, that it was Hathaway alone. He, you know, did what he did, and then obviously got in trouble for doing it to another person. And then we started looking into it, and I started feeling really strongly that there was probably some other people involved, or at least some other people that knew what happened. And I started going down that road, but then, as you know, just as I started thinking like we were making progress there, and I started looking at the specifics of the car, of the locations, and of all of that kind of stuff, I'm really back to square one. I think it was Hathaway alone. I think that he didn't have help. I'm not sure if someone knows, but if they do, it would certainly be from him telling. I certainly think that he's probably, you know, spilled his guts to people in jail or to family members or something like that. But as far as people knowing what happened because they were part of it, I'm not so sure. I think he was alone. I unfortunately don't think that she's alive. I think that he murdered her and dumped her body in somewhere that is just really impossible to find in the terrain that's in Orlando. The amount of people that disappear there support that. And I know that kind of puts us back at square one where we started coming into this thing. But I mean, that's where it is. I'm not going to make stuff up or sugarcoat it or make it seem like, you know, we found something that we didn't. I think it was a big circle back to kind of where her family is. And that's unfortunate. I think the chance of this case getting solved and people and the police finding Tracy, I think those things lie on the shoulders of James Hathaway. I think he's going to have to spill it. And even then, I'm not so sure that they'll find her because of the terrain and that kind of stuff and the wilderness and that kind of thing. Like, there may be nothing to find at this point. And that's kind of where I stand. I know that's not exciting or intriguing by any means, but that's the truth.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because we sort of wanted this to be us both giving our opinions based on what we've done over the last months. And in the case when we start talking about Jennifer Kesey over the years, actually, at this point. We didn't talk about this in advance in terms of our opinions on it, but we're basically on the same page, which tells me that it's, you know, probably something that has maybe some validity to it. I sort of went through the same thing coming into it, just based upon everything that was out there. James Hathaway did it by himself, and unfortunately, did kill Tracy and hid her body and that kind of stuff. And then you start getting into it, and like with anything, the more information you get, some things start to look a little bit more plausible, and then things start to get ruled out, and you start to come back down to what the reality might be. And at this point, I do believe it rests completely and solely on the shoulders of James Hathaway, and at what time he decides that he's going to confess and say where he put her body and all that kind of stuff. It just makes the most sense. I guess one person maybe could have helped him. I think anything outside of that is not very plausible, just in terms of people talking. But I do think he probably did it by himself. And to spare the people, because, you know, you've just basically gone through everything I was going to say, that's where I'm at with it. And it's not exciting. It's not, you know, we'd have rather been able to really set some things in stone, say this person and this person knew about it, and we're a little bit closer. It's just not the way that it played out. Yeah, it sort of is what it is at this point. But that's where I'm at, too. I'm right with you on that.
All right, we're going to pause one more time to hear from our sponsors.
Thank you.
I've tried so many different deodorant brands over the years, but I've recently found one that really makes a difference. I'm talking about a safe, simple, and effective deodorant from Native. I've been using the eucalyptus and mint scent for over a month now, and not only does it smell great, it just works. I'm not the only one either. There's over 8,000 five-star reviews to back me up. I love that it lasts all day and keeps me smelling fresh, especially in the summer heat when I need it most. You can check Native out in the Today Show, Elle Magazine, Pop Sugar, and even Refinery 29. Less is more with Native. There's fewer, simpler ingredients, so you know everything that's in the deodorant. Native also offers a wide variety of enticing scents for men and women. Plus, they release limited edition seasonal scents throughout the year as well. Also, if you've got sensitive skin, they've got you covered with an unscented formula and baking soda free formula. For 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code UNCONCLUDED during checkout. It's that easy. Get your 20% off your first purchase by visiting nativedeodorant.com and using our promo code UNCONCLUDED. There's no risk to trying it out either, with free returns and exchanges in the United States. Thanks to Native for supporting our show. And so you mentioned, let me might as well get into it. As far as Jennifer Kessie and current opinions or thoughts or theories, as far as her case goes, you're right. It's been 2 years now that we've been looking at her disappearance pretty hardcore. I mean, still to this day, we spend a lot of hours each week on, you know, her disappearance. And I think with hers, I've started trying to narrow down the possibilities into what I think is the most likely scenarios and look at it from that angle. And certainly, you know, what's most likely doesn't mean that's what happened. But just looking at it from an angle of, you know, can we go down this path and does that path take us somewhere? So we've talked a lot about the work connection, her manager and her coworker. And at certain points, I think I felt pretty strongly that those individuals may have been involved. Today, I'm not so sure. I think there's a better chance that it's probably someone who we all don't know. And by don't know, I don't necessarily mean just some random person that no one's ever mentioned, but I mean, you know, looking at along the lines of construction worker / you know, someone who knew her from her apartment building, something like that. To me today, I'm leaning that direction away from the coworker and the manager. And part of that is because those names are known. Those names are on the police radar. Those names have been investigated. And so having some faith in professional investigators that, you know, those individuals have been thoroughly vetted, I think we also have to look at the evidence in this case, and that's the person of interest. And I don't think that the person of interest is the manager or the coworker. So for me, that makes them a lot less likely. But, you know, not ruling them out. I think there's a lot of questions there that still need to be answered, certainly. And, you know, ask me tomorrow and maybe my opinion changes. And I certainly think that I'd still be willing to talk about those coincidences and things. In fact, I did my interview for the TV show that the Kessies are doing that's supposed to come out in January. And they asked me a lot about these particular individuals and stuff. And I said, you know, I said, this is the stuff that doesn't look good in that situation. These are the things that seem weird or seem strange, but at the same time, you know, that doesn't paint a picture of they're solely responsible. And then I think back too about the people that we talked to, the witnesses that we spoke with that saw different things. And, you know, part of them I feel like are possible, and part of them I'm not. And I don't know where to go from that. It's kind of, you take it all or you take none of it. And that's kind of where you end up. I think that the church sighting certainly needs to be investigated. I've been saying that all along. I'm hopeful that the TV show that we've worked with may make some progress in that area, actually. You know, if I was going to sum up my thinking today as far as what I think happened, the different things with the pings as far as where they were located that night, and the fact that her phone was likely turned off, I think that stuff is incredibly compelling. And again, that's part of the reason why I'm leaning towards a nighttime abduction. So the coworker, the manager are kind of fading down my possibility list a little bit. And some other individuals that may have other connections are coming up. Again, that's today. Tomorrow, it may be different. I think that there's more hope now than maybe there has been in the last few years. I think that the files being in the hands of the Kessies and their investigators more specifically is really something that can lead to a new era in the search for Jennifer. And I'll talk to Drew about that in a little bit. So you'll hear a lot more about that kind of stuff in a second. So I think I talked myself in a big giant circle there. I'm not sure that I really made any sense, but Scott, it's such a problematic case, and it's so crazy to think about that. I think that's kind of what ends up happening. We not just talk ourselves in circles, and then we just end up where we're like, I don't know.
Yeah, as I was listening to you talk, it made me start thinking even more, because again, before the call, I was really trying to, you know, really soul search on where I'm at with this, and I think I'm pretty settled. You know, just to be totally honest, which we've always been with the audience, you know, I've pretty much moved past the coworker and the manager. I just don't see much there. It doesn't seem as plausible to me. I think there's too many moving parts with something like that. The simplest explanation for this entire thing, and it always has been, is the workers at the complex. A lot of them lived there in the vacant apartments. She gets home from her trip. They see her come home alone. Stuff happens from there. With the pings, it plays into that. I think even with some of our sightings, plays into that a little bit. Some of the witnesses adds even a little bit more credence, whether those are her or not. It's just what we got, what we heard, lends more credence to a nighttime abduction by somebody who was at the apartment complex. Again, whether I don't want to completely pin it on the workers, but it makes the most sense in terms of them being able to disappear and stuff like that. So that's where I'm at with it. And until there's something that says otherwise or information that points very clearly in a different direction, you know, that's where I'm at with it. And I think it's easier for me to wait until that's disproven and there's some other information that leads elsewhere until I'm going to move on from it. I've been all over the place, but I feel like I'm pretty settled at this point on that. And sort of like with the Tracy thing, I know it's not the most exciting thing in the world, and it's not something that is going to solve the case, but for 2 years now, we've been trying to look at this from every possible angle. We've been trying to take in every single bit of information. That's why every time somebody called, 90% of the time, we went ahead and put it on. Obviously, there was the few we talked about on the episode that never made the cut, but everything else, we've tried to put it out there because there was so little information. I think there's so little information because it's probably the simplest explanation, like these things typically tend to be. I think once you start getting off too far, it's the rabbit holes that you go down, then you start to piece together information that's maybe not there. So I would love to be wrong. I'd love for there to be other information out there. But for now, I think it was probably somebody who was there that night, saw her come home alone, did what they did, moved her car the next day to throw the police off for a little bit longer, and they were off into the wind and gone. That's where I'm at with it. And I don't foresee changing that unless something big comes down the pipe as far as information or evidence.
As I mentioned earlier, this week I had a chance to catch up with Drew Kessie, Jennifer's father. So can you just kind of fill everybody in on where you guys stand at the moment?
Yeah, no, not a problem. We'd be more than happy to. I think it's a good thing too. honestly. But I guess it all started at, I guess it's year 13 when it truly, well, actually we've been trying for almost 3 years now behind the scenes, trying to speak with the powers that be of Orlando, be it the police department, city hall, everything else, just to try and get our hands on the records, Jennifer's files, since at that time, even it was like 11, 12 years that Jennifer had been, missing at that point. And we felt it's time that we had an opportunity. And for about 2 years behind the scenes, we had been refused at every turn. And we tried to do it real nicely, calmly, everything we can do. And it turned out that at year 13, I think it might have been 12, so sure. When did Logan last attend that? I guess that was 13. It just got out of hand and were at a standstill, and we knew they weren't moving forward, and we knew that very little was being done on Jennifer. So we told them right to their faces that, you know, we're gonna take you to court. We want these records. And I don't know if they took us seriously or not. But the day we filed, they were quite shocked. So we did end up in court, and, again, behind the scenes, we have a great legal staff, I think, and they were trying to really, I guess, I don't really want to say that Orlando stepped forward at this point, but Orlando stepped forward and wanted to make a deal. The new chief definitely wanted us to have the records. So the legal department and OPD and the city started to work with our lawyers on a legal document, a contract, in which we could get untethered, just openness in Jennifer's files with very little redaction. There's national laws that, you know, social security numbers, driver's licenses, blah, blah, blah. And we came to an agreement, and the agreement was hard to sign because there's a couple of things in there. And some of this, Sean, I'm going to be sketchy on, and within probably a couple months or maybe even a month from this date, and we're in September 1st now, tomorrow, I'd be more than happy to speak quite openly. And you will hear us quite openly and quite vocal. But at any rate, we did come to an agreement, and the agreement was that they would pass on all of Jennifer's files to us, unredacted except for what's, you know, legally has to be done by law. And we paid $18,000, some plus some hundreds, for that. It's not free. We have to make copies. And we have been getting that slowly but surely. It's well past the time that our contract had set. But we ended up in court again just last month on July 30th, I think it was. And the judge decided, well, why don't we just meet up in 60 more days and see how far they're along? That's, you know, it's hard for us to swallow, that we're waiting. It's probably going to take 6, 7, 8 months to get all the files in our hands, where it should have taken 3. So we're still working through that process, and that's why people don't hear from us a lot, is because we're working through receiving the files. We're working through problems within the files. And it just goes back and forth, and they're being corrected. But it's just, you know, the files I can talk much more about at a later date. But it's been a challenge with the files. The files are not all that we hoped for, but we knew that too. So, you know, there's a lot of hope involved. But we can speak about the files at a further date when we have them totally in our hands and we see exactly, because there's a lot of correction going on. So we're sitting here, and we do have our investigative team. They've been going for almost a year now, and they've been working through the files, which have been very difficult to work through, very time-consuming, the way we receive them and what we have to do with them just to try and make sense with them. So it's a very, very tough deal. And, you know, being pulled back into court and what have you, it's very expensive. I mean, it's just, it's blowing our minds what's going on. Any logic, okay, you go in, you do this, do that, simple, cut, easy, let's go. Nothing is, and especially in Jennifer's case. So we're fighting through many, many levels, and still trying to breathe. still trying to work, still trying to live, and still trying to move forward. We just literally got done, I guess, last month, maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we recorded a show for the Oxygen Channel television show called Up and Vanished. And that will be coming out probably in January, this upcoming January. I just spoke with the producer today, and she said it's just phenomenal how the show is turning out. And, you know, that's good to hear and all. But everything is a process with Jennifer, and everything is a challenge with Jennifer. And that's just the way it goes, but we're here for the fight, and we're just going to work through everything we need to work through. It's just incredibly slow, incredibly expensive, and we just breathe. there's nothing else we can do except breathe, try and keep our sanity, our logic, and move forward in a productive way, a very determined productive way. And that's what we're trying to do as individuals.
Now that you guys have had a chance to look at the files, or at least the ones that you've gotten so far, has there been anything new, or has anything stood out to you that wasn't known to you previously? Or anything along those lines?
There are many names that over 13 years, never heard in our life. Absolutely never heard in our life. They seem to work themselves out somehow, this, that, and the other thing. But, which I like, and I don't like. We thought we, you know, knew most things, which we do. But, it was very good to see new names, people never on our radar that we ever heard of in the situations in which they came up on the radar. So that's very valuable to us. It's very valuable, the information that we have on people that we have been, looking at all along for 13 years. It's good to have the information of the reports. People don't realize background checks and thorough, all that stuff that is gathered in the investigation that if we had in our hands in, I'm just going to say, our side of the legal and the investigative process, maybe by chance we hit something that they didn't. And that's all we're asking for. I mean, you had 13 years. You had how many investigators, how many agencies? You've had your turn. We may fail too, but at least give us the opportunity to try. It is our daughter, and we're trying everything we can. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff that helps us just like, nope, out. Which is what you want too. You want in, you want out. You want to throw people out as quick as possible that you've been looking at. And you want people that you've been looking at that are hanging around all these years. And the questions don't go away. So we've had a mixture of both. And there is good information when we have the ability to see the information. And that's what, you know, when I first said yes, it's positive to start getting stuff in your hands and reading reports and supplementals that detectives have written over the years and what have you. That's a positive thing for me. And then when you start getting everything together and again, we can speak about this in much further detail in the future. You realize what goes on. Then it becomes a challenge, which it has. And that's where we're at. We're at a challenge. I mean, you know, quite frankly, we're getting records that you may as well throw them on the floor, tell you people to pick them up, scan them, and send them to us. That's what we're getting. And along the way, why don't you redact whatever the hell you feel like. So it's a challenge in that way. And, you know, we found out that a lot of the files were being done while we were negotiating. They were redacting stuff. So they had to go back and do a whole bunch of stuff. So they were working against themselves at times. But, everything has been a challenge. And we've just come to know that nothing is easy. And we're up for the challenge. And people should realize that we are. And just work with us. Otherwise, we can do it easy or we can do it hard. We've done it both ways. But we're not going to go away. We want everyone to know that we may be quiet at times. We may not say a lot. But we're always doing something. And the Kessie family is never, ever going to go away. Even after I die, after Joyce dies, the Kessie family is still going to be looking for Jennifer until we do so and find her. Period. for the good or the bad. We said it for 13 years. Very few people really believe us. So we're not going anywhere. And you hit your struggles in life. It's, you know, 13 years. Just think of what you would do. Where were you 13 years ago? I mean, I was a 48-year-old man. Now I'm almost a 63-year-old man. Oh, my gosh. You know? I had young kids. Now my youngest is 35. I have grandkids now. I mean, it's life goes on, and this world does not stop for anyone or anything. So it's how you're going to have to go about it. And, you know, sometimes we've gone about it graciously. Sometimes we haven't. It's just we don't know. It's uncharted waters to a lot of folks in this world. And we're just trying to do the best we can. And then you hit lows monetarily. I mean, we don't want to have a GoFundMe account out there. That's truly, that's gut-wrenching to us at that point. It truly is. It is to me. We are very much givers as the Kessies, and it's very hard to take. It really is, but it's a necessity. This is going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and it already has cost at least $100,000. Just since we started to try and get records, and it's going to cost more. We've only just begun, so to say. So it's tough. It's going to be slow. It's going to be a process. But we have very dedicated people that are willing to work for us and willing to work for us no matter what to help us find Jennifer. And that we're very thankful for.
On a personal note, how are you guys holding up as a family and as a group? As you kind of start this new phase with having the files and your own investigation going on?
For us, Joyce and I, this last July 29th, just celebrated 41 years of marriage. I cannot do this without her, and I think that's vice versa on her part. It's, Sean, it's tough because every day that goes by, it you lose a little more of your heart. There's no getting away from it. And when you fight and you fight and you fight, and it's, you know, it's like, what is that at the arcade and the head comes up and you try and hit it? That's what we've been doing for 13 years. We get pounded against our heads for 13 years. And that's tough. And that's tough as individuals. I think I've said it before, you know, a lot of times Joyce and I sit not 2 feet from each other every night. And we have nothing to say a lot of times because we're in our own amazement and wonderment. We live our life on two levels. Your mind is always thinking of Jennifer, and then you have a life that you are living on a general basis. And it's the old hamster wheel. You don't get off. And that's very hard to deal with. Just the loss of a daughter. For 13 years that you have no idea where she is to this day. You have no idea what happened to her to this day outside that she was taken. At times, I don't know how we breathe. Other times, we have to go full force, full forward, and we have that energy, will, and desire to do so, again, for Jennifer. My son has... Basically, he's moved out of the area, and that hurts. We have two grandchildren now, and, you know, they're not close. We have to travel to see them now, and that's a lot. We used to see them every week on a regular basis, but I will tell you this much. I've never seen a family. Logan and his family are in such a great place. It's incredible. He's doing incredible. His wife and our grandchildren are doing fabulous. I've never seen him happier. I've never seen him in better shape. I thank the universe for that. I really do. So we're all in different places, but it's lonely and it's hard. But that's our fight, and we'll do what we need to do. That's what we have, and that's what we have been dealt. And I guess we're just people that are willing to take it, can take it, and whatever. I don't know, but I can't stop. We can't stop. Every day, every minute. It's I don't know any different in my life. I don't know any different. You know, after the years, I used to be on all the social sites and what have you. It's very hard for us to write things and continue the way we used to do in the first, say, 10 years. Lindsay has helped us tremendously. Harley has helped us tremendously. Dana on the website has helped us tremendously. We can't do it without these people. I can't sit at a computer every single day. I have to go out and try and make a living just to pay bills. And these people have stepped up and given a part of their life. And for 13 years, have done it. And we can't do it without them. It's emotional. The things that you have to do just to keep up with social media is incredible. And the things that come at you at social media are incredible. So we're very thankful to have people, as well as yourself. You know, you're on board. And it's just, we're thankful. We're thankful for an incredible amount of people that truly just want to find Jennifer. And that's what this is all about and nothing else, is to find Jennifer. No, we appreciate you. We really do. And everyone out there that asks about us and listens to you and what have you. We can't do it without you. We can't. To this day, we're waiting for somebody to make that call and say, enough is enough. I know at least this. Hopefully that can help. We're still waiting for that. I don't think the files are going to give us that.
That's going to be it for this episode. Remember, if you know anything about the disappearance of Jennifer Kessie or Tracy Ocasio, please speak up. You can call the Crime Line, the Orlando Police, or the Ocoee Police. You can call us. Just call somebody and say something. It's time for both of them to come home. As always, thank you for your participation, your comments, your emails, your messages, your calls, and thank you for just following along. You heard Drew say he appreciates it, and so do we. Music in this episode is by PC3, and we'll see you next time.